AMO Ministries, MINISTRIES.com. And he did what I called him, well, what the deal is, he refused to give money to the William Jefferson Bly, also known by his stage name William Jefferson Clinton. When Clinton ran for governor, this man was a millionaire and had all kind of things going. I mean, he's a charismatic minister, but the way he became a minister, a millionaire, is God really blessed him. Everything he put his hand to, he made a bunch of money at it, the end. And he had land, stores, businesses all over the place. And the BATF told me this was an evil guy that was wanting to overthrow the government. So I went to Alma, Arkansas, went to his compound. When I went to his compound, I'll match the stories together, but it's really complicated. But anyway, I went to his compound, and they were wanting to make him David Koresh before David Koresh was David Koresh. The BATF was doing very badly. There wasn't a whole lot of real serious crazies in the United States at the time that were acting up and doing crazy things. So what they wanted to do was create situations. So they had me go to his compound and check it out. But right there on the middle of the fence, as you come in the compound, they said, no firearms allowed. And Tony Alamo is a real Christian minister. He doesn't like guns. So I was totally unable to bust him with a BATF because we couldn't even give him a gun to bust him for or make a gun for it or get him or his followers interested in guns because they weren't interested in guns. So the deal is, what we got him on is tax evasion, which they could get anybody on. They got a man and a woman that were busted that drove a truck, and they helped him out, and they said they were down and out, and he helped them out with money and helped them do their business, and then they didn't pay taxes, so they busted Tony Alamo and put him in federal prison for tax evasion. But since then, I've called him up and apologized to him, and he's accepted my apology, and I've told him I'm sorry that he's such a fine Christian man. They told me if I could not bust this man, they wanted me to shoot and kill him.
Oh,
and I told
God.
Them, I told him I have never killed, I've killed a lot of people, but I've never killed a minister. And I told him I didn't want to start right now killing ministers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anyway, he was supposed to be David Koresh before David Koresh was David Koresh. But see, Vernon Wayne Howe, okay, his story starts out. He was a Seventh-day Adventist. Well, see, the way I got interested in him was the BATF wanted him badly. And the main way the BATF wanted him, because he was a Seventh-day Adventist preacher, but the Seventh-day Adventist wasn't real proud of his anti-government leanings. But his anti-government leanings, he was for guns. He had a lot of firearms now. To my knowledge, he did not have any illegal firearms.
Now, what did he change his name? He said that...
He went to Israel. Have you been to Israel?
No.
The country. Oh, you need to go sometime. It's a wonderful place. But right now, it's kind of a bad time to visit. But I went there 3 years ago when our group was blown up by a suicide bomber. Thank God I didn't get it. But anyway, he went to Israel. And when he went to Israel, he prayed to God. And he had a really religious excuse. He was a preacher now. Seventh-day Adventist. He went to Israel. He had what's called the Jerusalem syndrome.
Mm.
He said he prayed and an angel come to him and told him to change his name to David Koresh. Koresh, okay, instead of Vernon Wayne Howe, you know, David from the Bible. And then Koresh is an old ancient Babylonian term that just means the leader.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? It could be like saying president.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And anyway, the government, they had me reading all these reports, and I was getting interested in this guy. I volunteered to be the undercover to go down there and do the deal on him. They sent three undercover BATF agents down to pretend to be college students that lived in a house right down the street from him and got to know him and went to his meetings, went to his church groups and stuff. See, they tried to... The main mistake he made in life, he was a preacher, and I've heard some of his sermons. Some of them were pretty good. But the deal is, when he preached his sermons, he was heavy into the book of Revelation and thought the United States government had some people at the higher levels that were very corrupt. I mean, you know, I kind of agree with that now myself. But I'm saying, he said the United States government and some of the corrupt leaders are doing terrible things around the world and in the United States, and he didn't like it. And that's what got people interested in him. He's a preacher. Some of his people that go to his compound and live with him, they volunteer, go in and out anytime they want. Some of them are gun dealers that buy and sell firearms for a living. He went to one gun dealer there in Waco. He lived right outside of Waco, but I was trying to look up the name of the gun dealer, but he went to a gun dealer, Hewitt Arms Company, and Paul Fanta was the name of the gun dealer, and he went and bought 225 firearms in a very short period of time. When you buy over 3 firearms, it automatically puts you on a federal list of people to get interested in. If you buy over 3 firearms at one time, he bought 225.
Why did he have all those firearms?
Because he thought that the United States government was going to, the New World Order, was going to turn against the people of the United States and try to implant the mark of the beast in people. And when they did that, he and his followers were not... Well, I'm not saying he's wrong or right. He's dead now. But anyway, he said they're going to plant the mark of the beast in people, these computer chips. And when they do this, that he and his followers are not going to do it. They're not going to submit to it. And they're going to have to be an armed revolt. I mean, Thomas Jefferson, you know, the reason the gun laws exist in the United States government is in case the government gets so corrupt that people have to stop the government agents from doing things and so forth. There's a reason there were, you know, this was a citizen government at one time, but it is not now.
Now, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Now, he had all these guns.
That's
and,
right.
The fact is that people don't understand, and they're very judgmental a lot of times on these things because they listen to reports on the mainstream media that have not totally been researched. But from what I understand, there were mainly women and children there at the compound, little children. Little babies were in the compound.
That's right.
And it was more women and children than there were men. Is this not true?
That is correct. But there were men there, too. But he just had a lot of followers that were women and that had women and children and stuff. In fact, that was part of his problem. There's an old ancient saying, you should be very proud of your enemies. You made most of them yourself. And that was the deal with him. He had a guy there. Well, the first off, when he took over the compound, there was a leader there named George Roden. And George Roden is the one who started the problem with David Koresh. And the way Roden started the problem, Roden's mother gave the compound and told Roden that she wanted David Koresh to take over the compound and the leadership and be the preacher there. And she owned the bill and owned all the property. And she signed the deed over to David Koresh. Okay, Roden got real upset about it because she was basically writing him off, you know, the George Roden.
Stop you for a minute because we're going to get ready to go to the commercial.
Okay, sure.
And I don't want people to lose their train of thought on this because you're saying that he was basically set up, I think, from the
get-go. He was totally set up from the word get-go.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk more about the facts of Waco that we don't hear about on Truth Radio and the Deanne Burley Show.
You don't have to be very wealthy to want to protect your wealth. If you got a dime in your pocket, you don't want anybody stealing it, do you? Well, if you have something to protect, you deserve to protect it. And there's a new book out. I can't tell you how many books I've read on this subject, but this one looks to me as though it is going to be at the top of the pile for the rest of my life. It's called Bulletproof Asset Protection by William S. Reed, Juris Doctor. And this is safe stuff. You can depend upon this fellow to give you the directions for a legal path to follow. All kinds of suggestions. For details, go to www.assetprotectionteam.com or check out this book on the Truth Radio website. Do it right now. Don't delay.
Here's today's 30-second job tip from InterCristo.
Resumes and cover letters should always go together. Your resume shows the what's, when's, and why's of your career. Your cover letter is your introduction of you and what you offer to the company. Tailor it and the resume to the job. Use language describing how you can help the organization. The resume and cover letter should be used to get the interview. The interview hopefully gets you the job.
Head to InterCristo.com to aid your job search. InterCristo, the Christian Career Specialists.
We're gonna rise up with the sun in the morning. We're gonna start each brand new day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of our Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're gonna do the work our Lord puts before us. And there's a job that truly needs to get done. The job of waking up the nation to the new world order, which is trying to put us under their thumb.
Hi, it's Deanne and the Deanne Brody Show again. And we're live. Call in number is 866-771-8402. We have John Peeler, former ADF, FBI agent, who worked with President Clinton and in Arkansas, and he was also involved with Waco and also Oklahoma City at a very interesting level. And John, before we went to break, was telling us about how David Koresh took over the compound down there in Waco. John, you want to finish?
Yeah, I'd love to. But anyway, this is a fascinating story. And this is where the big fiction and the big lie comes in. Okay? George Roden, oh, his mother's given Koresh the compound and the lease to it, the deed and everything. Okay? He tried to actually get a firearm and kill David Koresh, and he was unsuccessful. Okay? He got arrested for doing this. And then he went to court and tried to stop David Koresh from being the leader and taking over the compound. And when he went to court, he said in a court of law that David Koresh had impregnated his 75-year-old mother. And David Koresh, this is true. I mean, this is true. This is worse than fiction. It's the truth. And in court, and the judge and everybody just looked at David Koresh, and David Koresh was representing himself, and he got up and said, if I impregnated a 75-year-old woman, I'm God. And that's how that misquote come around. You see what I'm saying? You know, like the virgin conception. You see what I'm saying? And that's what they kept misquoting. And they said from then on that David Koresh said that he was God. And this was just a sarcastic comment that he made in court. And after he said it, everybody just died laughing, Deanne. I wasn't there, but I had some federal agents that were there, and they said the whole court busted up, and he won the case because the judge didn't think he impregnated this 75-year-old woman is the way he got her to give the deed over to him. So anyway, then he's in charge of the compound, and then he gets a guy from, I think he was from Hawaii, named Mark Briault, B-R-E-A-U-L-T. And Mark Briault claimed to be a prophet, but he'd come up with all kind of really, I've heard some of his stuff on tape. He'd come up with some real, real screwy stuff, Deanne. So anyway, he had to throw, David Koresh had to physically throw him out of the compound, so he threw him out of the compound. So he went to Ken. Have you ever heard of Ken?
No, Ken Reagan?
Okay, no. The Cult Awareness Network.
Oh, no.
Okay. That's when they said, they first started saying that he was abusing men, women, and children, and that he was a cult, and that he was doing things to people. When this Briault fellow went to all the authorities and got Canton to say that he was a cult. And then another guy, a guy named David Jewell, his wife left him because he was abusing her physically. He was a disc jockey on a radio station there. So his wife moved in with David Koresh to get away from an abusive relationship. And when David Koresh told her that she could live in the compound as long as she wanted and not have to worry about this guy coming in there and beating her up and stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this guy got on radio and TV and said that David Koresh was having sex with his wife and stuff, which was all a bunch of jive. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then, he made these really, really interesting enemies. And then a magistrate there named Green got it in for David Koresh because he kept hearing all these people saying these bad, terrible things about Koresh. So the county sheriff checked him out. The child abuse people checked him out. They could not find that he was doing anything wrong. Okay, here's where I come into the picture. Okay, I went into the office of ATF office in the TCBY building in Little Rock called Bill Buford. Bill Buford was a Green Beret in Vietnam, was the regional director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. He's retired now. He had a big Bible on his desk and was reading the Bible. And I said, well, that's, thank God you finally got, he was known for being a mean guy. I said, thank God you finally got rid of, I mean, you know, he's got a mountain yard crossbow and all this Vietnam big pictures of piles of dead people on his desk and stuff. And I said, thank God you finally got religion, man. I said, thank God, you know. And he said, no, I didn't, John, and don't tell nobody I got a Bible in here. I said, okay, what's the problem? He said, well, this Vernon Wayne Howe, this David Koresh thing, we've been told to get interested by other federal agents to get interested in this guy, his superiors in Washington, D.C., and the other federal BATF agents had told him that he had to get interested in this compound and do something about him. But see, the main thing, it was politics. Okay, the BATF was doing very poorly. They were wanting to combine the BATF with the FBI because of Ruby Ridge. You know, they had done a terrible deal at Ruby Ridge
terrible,
and stuff,
right?
On the Weaver family.
In fact, they had gotten a call from people connected with Randy Weaver when it happened, and I thought it was outrageous. His
that was totally outrageous.
Yeah, laying in the pile of blood, and nobody could get any medical treatment today. It was outrageous.
That was a terrible thing. So anyway, the ATF was looking bad. They were wanting them to become part of the FBI. They didn't want to be part of the FBI, so they needed to make a big deal. So they took, okay, I'm talking to him about this guy. He's telling me what an evil guy he is and how he's abusing these children and stuff. See, the ATF is not in charge of child abuse. And I said, well, why are we interested in it? You know, what? This is a child abuse case. And they said, well, what it is, he's a gun dealer. And he's stockpiling all these guns. And he says the government's bad. And he's got fully automatic weapons. Well, they had the sheriff to go there because the neighbor said that he was firing fully automatic weapons. But what he had two hellfire devices. A hellfire device is a little thing you put on a trigger guard of a semi-automatic weapon, and it has a spring on it, and it makes a semi-automatic weapon fire as fast as it can. But I think they're still legal. I'm not sure. They might have changed the law now. But they were legal, but it makes the gun sound like it's a fully automatic because it fires as fast as it can cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But see, these people, you know, he was checked up with the sheriff. He told the sheriff he had these two hellfire devices, which were legal. And the deal is the sheriff left him alone and went on. But the BATF said they suspected him of having full automatic weapons. No one ever saw a full automatic weapon. So what the deal is, they got interested in him. I volunteered to go down there and shoot him, Deanne, because they told me he was molesting this young girl and had a picture of her. After the deal was all over with, I found out that young girl was his wife, Deanne.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, they totally lied to me like they did everybody else, Deanne. But the deal is, one of the things that bothered me most, Deanne, is I knew about this deal before, during, and after. And the people that were involved in it, Bill Buford and Glenn Jordan, they need to be fired and put in jail. But Bill Buford's retired now. But after he did the assault, and after he did this assault, okay, before he went down there, I told Bill Buford, just because they say they're a church group, be sure to watch your ass. Guess where he got shot at, Dan?
Okay, all right.
He was upstairs in one of the rooms trying to get in their armory room and get into them, and he was shooting down, and he had a flak jacket and a vest on and a helmet. Other ATF agents were shooting up, and other ATF agents shot him, not the way. Okay, well, the assault happened. I was not there. I volunteered to be there. But the reason I was not there, there was a guy named Tom Peterson, and he was talking William Jefferson Bly, also known as William Jefferson Clinton, with a fountain pen gun with a rise and tilt bullet. And they told me this was much more important than it was for me to go to Waco. It being the Waco shootout. They call it the turkey shooter, the Waco shootout.
Oh,
and this is before it happened now, Deanne.
Mm-hmm.
They took the most firearms, the most ammunition, and the most agents ever to a raid in American history.
Now, there was some type of device that looked like it was napalm that went through the back of the building.
Well,
and it wiped out most of the children and young people that were down in the lower part of the...
I'm afraid you're exactly right. What happened? The initial raid started... The warrant was for February the 28th, 1993. Okay, that's when Bill Buford did the raid. Okay, and one of the main things that happened in the raid, have you ever seen Waco, The Great Lie, the movie?
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Okay, well, I'll try to make a copy and send it to you if I can get a copy. But anyway, it's available. But I saw the PATF copy before they added it. Okay, three of the agents in the ATF were on loan to be security guards for Bill Clinton when he was president because they didn't have enough Secret Service agents to guard him, and a lot of Secret Service agents didn't want to guard him then, didn't want that detail because he's such an evil person, and they knew it. And anyway, the Secret Service, the ATF, some of three agents volunteered to guard Bill Clinton, and they found out all about Bill Clinton, all about his dirty New World politics, all the dirt that he's done, the people that he's killed, read copies of the Clinton diaries and stuff, and they were about to become whistleblowers on Bill Clinton. So what happened? These three guys were told to go upstairs in the upper room where allegedly the firearms were stored. When they climbed up the ladder and went in the upstairs room during the raid, another agent outside threw two hand grenades into the room after these three agents went into the room, Deanne. And then he got his MP5 HK submachine gun and fired two bursts of ammunition into the room and shot them and killed them, Deanne. They knew too much information, and they were liable to talk.
Now, there's a film of this, isn't there? There's some type of filming?
That's what I'm saying. The Waco the Great Lie shows this happened. These three guys died, Deanne. And just because they knew too much about Bill Clinton.
So then this was going on while they were rolling. It looked like a tank in the back of the building.
Well, you're exactly right. Well, before that happened, though, Mike Schroeder, one of the guys that lived in there, he was trying to get into his wife and child, and the ATF shot and killed him on the fence while he was trying to get in and left his body there till 3 days later they come with a helicopter and a hook and got it. They went around the compound with armored vehicles, and, you know, it's against the law for the United States government to send military personnel and armored vehicles on a person in the United States unless drugs were involved.
Right.
So they had to say that they thought he was making crystal methamphetamine, which he was not doing. But that's what they said, where they could bring the tanks in and stuff from Fort Hood, Texas, is where they bought. But anyway, the Posse Comitatus law said that's against the law unless a person is making drugs. But anyway, they played loud music day and night. Nancy Sinatra, these boots were made for walking.
Yeah.
You know, I just got a brand new box of matches. And you know, if you play with matches, you're going to get burned. They played the sound of dying rabbits. They played the sound of chanting Tibetan monks. They played this sound. It had lights day and night. They cut off all their utilities. They cut off all their plumbing and stuff. They made life hell for those people. Not counting the official raid where they shot and killed and wounded people. Well, see, the first shots were fired from the helicopter and through the front door. And the front door was still partially intact after it was all over with, even after the fire. It was put in a box as evidence and sent to the FBI office in Washington, D.C., and it got lost in the mail, Deanne. It got lost in the mail, U.S. mail. They lost the door. The reason they lost the door was evidence. The people fired at an angle from the helicopter. Well, okay, when the agents come up, he come to the door and started to talk to them, and then they pulled out their weapons and started to shoot, and he slammed the door. And when he slammed the door, the people from the helicopter heard the loud slamming, and the people on the ground in the helicopter thought a shot had been fired, so they started shooting through the door and shot him. They wounded David Koresh right there at the very beginning of the battle. But see, they had planned to kill him. They didn't plan to take him alive. Before they went down there, they told me they were going to kill David Koresh and as many of his followers as they could, and that's exactly what they did.
What was it with Janet Reno? Why would she order, and what you're saying was allegedly a child's molestation-like case, all these troops and various levels of military-like people. Like I said, I was watching it. It was disgusting. And it was vile to me. I mean, man had children and women in there. They ordered
exactly
the tank
right.
down. They had all these people firing. And it was the same thing that happened to Ruby Ridge. When I got that call, it was outrageous. The man's daughter
right.
was laying
right.
on the kitchen floor with her intestines out and dying. And they wouldn't allow anyone in to help his daughter or his wife or his son. It was a really crazy situation. And then after this, we had this situation in Waco. Now, to me, what it looked like is this particular agency, like you said in the beginning, did not have the funding to stay open, and they had to show a reason to be funded. So they basically created a scenario. Is that not right?
That's 100% correct. DNC, you got Truth Radio. You know what's happening in the world. Most people, you know, my lovely wife, the one I have now, she doesn't believe that this kind of stuff happens. She does now that she's married to me and knows it, sees these films and movies and talks to these people and stuff. But she said before she married me, she hoped that this kind of stuff did not happen in America. But see, they used a tank retriever with a boom on it, which is a huge armored vehicle and stuff. And they used another Bradley fighting vehicle. They used armored vehicles. And what they did on the turret, they had a device that fired liquid napalm. They fired liquid napalm in there. And what they did, most of the people that died, the women and children, most of them that died, he had underground shelters under the ground.
And it blew through there.
You're exactly right. What the tank did, the tank went and crashed the building and the windows and doors and moved the building off its foundation. What it did, it closed the trap door lid and closed it shut and parked right on top of it where the people couldn't get out. And then they fired tear gas and liquid napalm down into the entranceway to the tunnel, and they basically burned and suffocated the people down in the tunnel.
Now, let me explain to the audience, too, about napalm. It was used in the Vietnam era, and it was the most lethal thing they had because, see, it caused a rolling fire. There was nothing you could do to put it out once it was hit. It would roll and roll and burn up everything in its path. At one point, about maybe, I guess it was close to, like, 1990, maybe it was 89 and 90, I got word that they were going to roll napalm on a train through most of the major cities. So when I found out it was coming into Chicagoland area, I did my thing like I normally do. I started blasting it like the past to try to prevent it. Because, see, napalm is something, too, that even in a container, it eventually erodes the container and leaks out. And this stuff was being housed because it was so dangerous and you can't get rid of it. They had it under one of the ocean bodies. And the containment was in, it was getting ready to rust away, and it was going to release. So they were trying to move it to another facility, which was on the outskirts of Illinois. And there was so the napalm thing is something that you would use against a military operation, not a church group. But then Janet Reno ordered this. Now, why and what was her mind in her mind at the time, would you say, that Janet Reno allowed this to happen?
Janet Reno was one of the best friends William Jefferson Bly, also known as William Jefferson Clinton, ever had, and she supported him 100%. When things started going bad with Clinton, anytime publicity started going and stuff, she did something outrageous, you know, like the little boy thing in Florida and stuff. They programmed, you know, it's a shame that it's like the tail that wags the dog. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, we're going to commercial, and we'll be back. Again, with John Peeler and this fascinating story of Waco. This is outrageous. Kids dying. Napalm. Think of your children. Think of you. TruthRadio.com.
A Truth Radio listener in Minnesota has shared with us a CD of a British documentary exposing the American military for forcing our military pilots to take amphetamines in order to enhance their performance when they're doing flight missions. Fighter pilots on speed. That's what this CD is all about. I'll send you this DVD. And you can contribute anything you want for it. The only thing I ask is that you pledge that you will share it with your friends and neighbors. Call in a dozen neighbors and ask them to do it with you. This is something the American public simply doesn't know. We have to spread the word. It's an important DVD. Please, let me send it to you. I'm going to send you a bonus presentation as well if you order it. Send us a contribution of any size, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444.
Is your marriage rooted in selfishness or in self-denial? With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey. During the early years of our marriage, I can still recall my wife, Barbara, standing there on the porch. I looked at her through the rearview mirror as I was pulling out of the driveway, taking two of our kids fishing and leaving her at home with two kids in diapers. I didn't catch any fish that day, but I did catch an important concept. A husband needs to give up some of his hobbies in order to reduce his wife's burdens and meet her needs. Husbands, the key here is self-denial. Romans 15, verses 2 and 3 say this, "Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, to his edification. For even Christ did not come to please himself."
Moments Together with Dennis Ramey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series, at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
We're going to rise with the sun in the morning. We're going to start each brand new day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of our Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're going to do the work our Lord puts before us. And there's a job that truly needs to get done. The job of waking up the nations is a new world order, which is trying to put us under their thumb.
Hi, welcome back. And this is D.M. Burley with John Peeler. And this fascinating story of Waco. Now, I want to bring this whole topic back to the beginning of the program and what John had originally said. He had said in Waco, gave a Koresh, changed his name because he had a religious experience in Jerusalem. And then when he came back, he was into Revelations, and he felt very highly strong about the fact that he said that we were going to receive the mark of the beast and some kind of chips in our body. Now, when I had talked to John earlier, we discussed something, a device that they have out. It's a device, a gun with a silencer. And, John, you want to tell the listening audience about this device?
Yeah, I'd love to, but let me say, make one other statement about the 86 people that died, the 23 children. Okay, one of the things I still have nightmares about is after it was all over with and said and done, I went to the TCBY building, the BATF office of Bill Buford and Glenn Jordan and Clay Alexander, and in the office, and this is after it's all said and done, and after they've back and they've been to burials and rehabilitations and everything else, they had a table with aerial photographs, they had tapes, they had movies, and the thing that bothered me the most, Dan, on one table, they had 100 spoons laying out. And these were not expensive spoons. These were mostly like stainless steel and silver plated, and they were all mismatched, these 100 spoons. Mm. Of these 100 spoons, Deanne, about 30 or 40 of these spoons were baby spoons. You know, the kind that you teach a baby how to eat with that have a little curve on the end of them and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, these 30 or 40 of them were baby spoons, Deanne, and these things were all burnt and twisted and messed up. And I asked them why they had this collection of old spoons on the table, and they told me when they took the metal detectors and went through Mount Carmel after they burned it down, they went through there looking for evidence and stuff, and they found all these metal spoons, so they just stole them, they kept them, and brought them back as souvenirs and gave them to their friends and stuff as souvenirs. And these were baby spoons that children had used till they had been murdered in a massacre by the United States government federal agents, just to make a publicity thing for Bill Clinton that times were terrible and they needed to stop these cult groups and stuff. And he wasn't a cult group. People could come and go anytime they wanted. But like I was saying, like David Koresh said on some of his tapes and stuff, he was worried that the federal government were going to put chips in people. Well, I'm no longer with the United States government, but are you still there, Deanne?
Yes, I am.
Okay, okay. Let me read this article in this police supply catalog that I just got in the mail today. Okay. You know what a GPS system is?
Yeah.
Okay. The GPS tracking systems and stuff, okay, like they used one in the Scott Peterson case to show that he was in the area when, you know, he went around and stuff in his car and stuff. A federal judge ruled in favor of law enforcement that data from GPS devices, global positioning satellite devices secretly installed on a suspect's vehicle could be used against them as evidence in court. Are you with me?
Yeah.
They can illegally put a system on your vehicle and track you anywhere you go, and they did this in the Scott Peterson case. Okay.
I think they also did it to Barney Ross out here that died in Wisconsin. It was involved with the Judge Lefko case.
I'm sure that they did. Mm-hmm. But a company called Empire North in Copenhagen, Denmark, introduced a law enforcement tool called the ID Sniper Rifle, trademark registered. According to Empire North website, a device similar to a traditional sniper rifle is used to shoot a GPS microchip into the body of a person observed in suspicious behavior. The microchip, they say, causes no internal damage as it enters the subject's body. The subject can't tell that the chip has been implanted and only feels something that resembles a mosquito bite. At the same time, a digital camcorder with a zoom lens in the rifle scope takes a high-resolution picture of the target. The image is stored on a memory card for later analysis. The manufacturer maintains that law enforcement needs this tool to gain an advantage on the new urban battlefield because it is difficult to engage a suspect in the streets without endangering or involving bystanders or causing antagonism toward law enforcement. In other words, they have a weapon that they can get, pistols and rifle weapon, that make very little noise, that they can shoot you with and implant a global positioning satellite tracking device inside your body to where they can keep up with you and follow you in a crowd or use the weapon to zero in on the chip and shoot the chip. Well, they don't even have to aim the weapon. They can have an automatic weapon that tracks you down and can shoot you from a distance. Isn't that fascinating?
This is ridiculous. Mike, are you there?
I sure am.
Do you have any questions you want to ask your polls here about this program we had on Waco and what John's saying?
John's doing an excellent job. Swing heil, John.
Hey, swing heil, Mike. Good to hear from you again, man.
Nice to hear from you, too. And all this stuff that's happened, you're absolutely right. You're 100% accurate. And if people could understand that they're being manipulated into a system and trying to fight the same system that you're manipulated in, it's kind of like we're sheep, and either we're rebellious or we're always willing to be the silent majority. But you're still a sheep. And until you understand that, you get caught in horrible situations and you don't know any better. So the people that got what they did in Waco, it's just incredible. I mean, I knew about it and I understand, but it's just incredible that we can't make anybody else understand these things and realize that time's a wasting.
And we're responsible for this because we sit and watch it and we don't say anything.
It's like the German.
A conversation I had earlier with John, we were talking about the fact that, you know, you can look at Sonny Bono. We were talking about him because he had a relationship with Tony Alamo. And the thing was that he died in a skiing accident. And it posed the question, is it possible to put something on the bottom of skis or something to make them slide in a tree? You know, unless they get these serial killing trees out in the forest, because it was him and Kennedy's, one of the Kennedy brothers that died. You want to tell them what you said?
Oh, yeah. Well, the deal is, they have substances they can put on skis to make them super slick, and he wasn't the greatest skier in the world. So I was told that they put some substance on the bottom of his skis that made him super slick, so he lost control and slid into a tree, which is not a, you know, if you can make a thing look like an accident, that's the way to go. You see what I'm saying? If you kill someone and make it look like an accident. But I was going to tell you something else that's fascinating that happened to me. Years ago, I wrote, and Dwayne Graham brought it to my attention the other day. He's been on your show before, too.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter to Terry Nichols and asked if he wanted me to go to court and tell the truth about the Oklahoma bombing. And the letter that I wrote to him while he was in prison when he first got arrested, it came back with stamp. It's got a hand on it. It says, return to sender. This person is deceased. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, he is not deceased, you see. But I'm saying, tell your people that do your show, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, if they want to write me a letter, I'll try to respond to them if I'm still willing and able.
And you've been shocked. Your car was forced off the road. Your son is locked up in prison right now serving time. He's been in there for 9 long years for a murder with no body, no forensic evidence, and nothing. And this is okay. And then the funny thing is where you are. The governor of the state is a minister, and he allows this?
He's a joke. He's not a real minister. You know, what Tony Alamo said, he's a real minister. Tony Alamo said, I said, are you going to run for governor, run for any senator or anything? He said, why would I want to take a demotion? I work for God. That would be a demotion if I became governor or senator. You see what I'm saying? But people can reach me through you or through Post Office Box 15451, North Little Rock, Arkansas, 72231-5451. And my son is at the East Arkansas Regional Unit in Arkansas. He's charged with murder. His name is John Christopher Peeler. He's number 107832 in Barracks 19, East Arkansas Regional Unit, Brickey, Arkansas, Post Office Box 180, Brickey, Arkansas, 72320-0180. And like you said, he's doing life without for murder. There's no weapon, no blood, no hair, no forensic evidence, no eyewitness, no crime scene.
And guess what? Nobody.
I was a whistleblower just like you did. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was a whistleblower, and the deal is, as you well know, I mean, they targeted you.
Yeah, they poisoned you. They used people in the medical field.
Right.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Yes, please do, Mike.
I just want to say that people have to start realizing bad things happen because we allow it to happen. And if they realize that and stop fighting these goofy wars and doing everything the government and our religions tell us, we can finally grow as a human being and become the new organic society that we should have been a long time ago.
Yeah, well, the whole thing is that we need to get together. And anyone that wants to contact me, by the way, you can go to my website, Blogger, which is deanneburley.blog, blogspot.com, blogspot.com. And there you're going to see a list of my guests and this radio links back to this and other radio programs I'm getting ready to launch. And you need to understand that I'm a part of the American society. We're all patriots here, and we're trying to tell America, wake up, smell the coffee. We need to do something fast. I mean, we're losing ground daily. We have people out here that are whistleblowers, they're under attack. But then you have the U.S. judge that happened to get killed in Georgia. Somebody proclaimed to get the culprit, and they gave them a huge award. The whistleblowers that had information on World Trade Center, Waco, information on Ruby Ridge and everything else, they've been totally violated and victimized. Every last one of them. There are people here that know about the Saudi connection and ties directly to the White House with physical evidence, not something you see in magazines, documented evidence, and they get nowhere, and they get attacked, and then they are gone. This is how corrupt this government has gotten. And we are a part of it.
And also point out the fact that people that believe that the party makes a difference one over the other, if they're looking
there is no party difference. What they have done is, in fact, in Illinois, they were moving from one party to the next. They didn't care if they were Democrat or Republican, and it was just to win an election. Until we realize that we have to judge and act as people and judge our candidates as people and by what they do, we're going to get a whole bunch of garbage in, garbage out. And it's our responsibility.
We also have to remember the fact is that no matter who gets elected, they're just as much just a figurehead, a puppet anyway, and it's at all levels. It's not just up in the higher levels of Washington. This is going on all over the country.
And all over the world.
All areas of our government, like our villages, our towns, our cities, the county itself, whichever one it is, and all the dirty things that are going on behind our backs.
And by the way, for the listeners, I want to bring up about Malachi Benunu. I've been getting letters from him daily. And there's a bunch of people getting ready to go down to Israel to fight for the cause to get him released. They're trying to re-imprison him for another, who knows, 18, 20 years, whatever. And he wants to come here to the United States. And look at this mess. Where are we going to clean our mess up? We're religious,
we need to clean up our mess.
And I thank you for tuning in, and come back next week. And I thank you, and thank you, John Peeler, and thank you, Mike. And this is the end.
To everyone.
Hey, thank you. If we don't all hang together, we'll hang separately.
That's right, and we got to get rid of that concept.
Highest tree. Take care. Bye-bye.
The meeting is now over. All the participants have been disconnected.
Master Herbalist for 43 years, we've offered free natural health.